Tomorrow marks 5 years since Syria's brutal civil war began, killing hundreds of thousands and displacing millions more. The humanitarian situation remains the most dire since the Second World War, as halting peace talks toward a resolution begin again. Chief Foreign Affairs correspondent Margaret Warner begins our coverage.
Huddled together, hand in hand, hundreds of migrants streamed out of a camp in northern Greece today. They trudged along muddy trails and forded surging rivers in search of a break in the border fence.
We hope we can cross, because we have a lot of people. Our number is big now.
They're fleeing the overcrowded, rain-soaked Idomeni camp, where they've been stranded since its northern neighbor Macedonia closed its border to refugees last week. Many are Syrians fleeing the war at home. In Geneva today, the first round of United Nations-brokered peace talks aimed at ending that conflict got underway as UN Special Envoy to Syria, Stephane de Mistura, hosted Syria's ambassador to the UN.
We believe that we should have at least a clear roadmap. I'm not saying an agreement, but a clear roadmap, because that's what Syria is expecting from all of us. As far as I know, the only plan B available is return to war, and to even worse war than we had so far.
The start of talks comes as a tenuous cessation of hostilities in Syria entered its third week. Today, 5 years since the conflict began, UNICEF painted a dire picture for the country's children. One in three Syrian children has been born since the war broke out. And 8.4 million, or nearly 80% of Syrian children, are affected by the violence, either within the country or as refugees elsewhere. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, reported that 46% of the more than 150,000 refugees inundating Europe this year came from Syria. Those numbers outpace last year's, when a record 1 million people fled to Europe. Many make the perilous sea crossing from Turkey to Greece, but now, because Balkan borders are blocked, thousands are stranded in Greece. At an EU summit last week, Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu offered to take back huge numbers of migrants in exchange for $3 billion in aid and progress on Turkey's joining the European Union. The EU summit with Turkey resumes later this week, but the UN Refugee Agency has strongly objected to the deal, saying it would violate the European Human Rights Convention. That's where Jeffrey Brown picks up the story.
And joining me is the new head of that agency, Filippo Grandi, United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Let's start with that tentative deal that Margaret was just talking about between the EU and Turkey. What is your objection to having Turkey bring back some of those refugees?
I think we should put this in context. Turkey is the country that hosts the largest number of Syrian refugees. We have heard it, 2.7 million. In fact, it's the country that hosts the largest number of refugees worldwide, mm-hmm. all kinds of refugees. And we have always promoted the idea that the responsibility of hosting Syrian refugees should be shared more widely. Many of them have reached Europe together with refugees from other countries, and we have always encouraged Europe to manage that flow in an orderly way. Unfortunately, this wasn't done. Chaos has followed. What we see in Greece today is very worrying. Europe is reacting in an emergency manner and is now discussing with Turkey the possibility of sending back to Turkey some of these people.
Well, now, what we're saying... Would that not create a more of an orderly passage?
Well, first of all, it needs to be done. And if it is done, it is called technically readmission of refugees from one country to the other. It needs to be done in a manner that respects the human rights, the rights of these refugees. So what we're saying to Europe, what we're advising Europe, if it is done, it needs to be done in a manner that fully ensures guarantees for the people that go back that they're protection and their rights are observed.
Speaking of Turkey and other countries that border Syria, where there are so many refugees and so many financial pressures on these countries. Now, you've had a lot of pledges of money Do they have the resources to handle the refugees they have? Is the money coming through that you need?
There was a conference in London at the beginning of February in which $11 billion were pledged to support refugees and hosting communities and host countries in the region. Some of that money has been paid and pledged and paid, but we haven't got the full picture yet. What we're telling donor governments is that those pledges need to be expedited because for people on the ground, results have to be tangible and visible. Otherwise, the risk is that they will move on and also try to reach Europe.
When you look at countries in Europe closing their borders, you look at political trends, even this weekend elections in Germany, do you see the tide turning against refugees in Europe?
We see a hardening of the position of certain governments in respect of receiving refugees. What we are, of course, telling Europe is that the responsibility to take care of refugees should be shared globally. Syria has shown that this cannot be any more the responsibility of two, three countries bordering the country at war, Syria in this case, but has to be shared more widely, including by Europe.
So thousands of refugees now stranded in Greece, right? What should be done for those? What is the situation there? How dire is it? And what should be done for those people in the short term?
The situation is dire. People were trying to move on for Greece. The northern border was closed. So now about 40,000 are stranded there and more are coming. The important thing is to find adequate sites to host them temporarily until solutions are found, including perhaps relocation through Europe, a decision that Europe made many months ago, but which it didn't implement.
You were talking earlier about donor countries, the pledges you've received. I wonder about the United States. What do you want to see come from the United States? Is it more money? Should the United States take in more refugees?
The United States is the largest donor country to refugee programs. And it's also the country that takes the largest number of resettled refugees from all nationalities. Of course, the number of Syrians that all countries are taking through resettlement and other legal means of transferring them from one country to the other, of course, those numbers are still inadequate compared to the 4.7 million that are hosted by the countries neighboring Syria.
So why is this so tough to crack? I mean, why does it seem to get worse? Why is there intransigence from governments that keeps people in this plight? And how long do you think the world has?
I think there's a mixture of motives that have made governments and sometimes public opinion more resistant to hosting refugees. There are economic reasons, economic downturn. There's security reasons, the fear, the unjustified fears that refugees bring terror. Refugees flee terror. They don't bring terror to countries. Their arrival is very carefully vetted. So there should be no fear. But there's an irrational fear, which is, in many countries, fueled by political propaganda.
And Margaret's piece was talking about the potential prospects for a peace settlement. But who knows, right? Do you expect for the time being that the flight of refugees will continue?
Until there is war, people will try to flee. This is in human nature. People are afraid of bombs, of destruction, and want to go away. That's why what has happened in Geneva today, 5 years after the beginning of the war, the resumption of peace talks is so important. It must succeed.
Filippo Grandi is UN High Commissioner for Refugees. Thank you so much.
Thank you.